second portion of the presentation, we'll be talking more about the application process, providing more details on the requirements and the process to submit your materials, and we'll also talk about the rules of the auction in greater detail. The first step in the application process is to register for an online application account. So as we've noted, there is a website where you can find all the information and documents needed for participation in the auction, which is aepohiocpp.com. And there is there a link where you can provide your information for an online application account. So on the website, from the left-hand navigation bar, you have the Contact Us link, and if you click on that, you will see a number of other links there, the last one of which is to register for an application account. So you will be asked to provide various information, including contact information for a representative and the name of your company, and then we will issue an application account, which means we will issue login credentials so that you can log in to a second website, which is the website where you will provide your materials for the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. You don't need to use that form that's on the website. You can alternatively provide that same information, namely the company name, full name of a contact, along with contact information, phone, and alternate number, if available, as well as email address, by email to us at aep-cbp@nira.com. And what I just said really applies for new bidders, for companies that have participated in ESP3. Those will, we call them returning bidders in this portion of the presentation. For returning bidders, you will receive your login credentials by email from us. Those will be emailed to you on Monday, October 9th. So the day before the Part 1 window opens. So just a few bullet points here on the application process that we'll come back to in the slides that follow. As we said in the start of the presentation, for those returning bidders, we'll be providing the login information. And generally speaking, the application process is streamlined. And that will mean that the Part 1 form is going to be pre-populated with previously submitted information, and some of the inserts, those standalone forms that we've talked about, are going to be retained, and I'll tell you exactly which of those inserts will be retained in the slides that follow. So when we say the application process is streamlined for returning bidders, that's strictly a Part 1 statement. For Part 2, both returning bidders and new bidders face exactly the same requirements. So those inserts will be posted on the application website for you to download, and so that you can prepare all the inserts that are necessary, and we'll go through which ones apply to all bidders by opposition to those that apply only to bidders in certain circumstances or those that are optional. Finally, just to highlight for you that the Part 1 application includes an opportunity to submit your comments on some credit documents. The list of acceptable modifications, so the modifications that have already been accepted by AEP Ohio, that list is already posted to the CPP website. So that, you can consult that list before making your own proposals or comments. So in the next few slides, I'll go through the requirements at a high level from the Part 1 application and from the Part 2 application. So in the Part 1 application, you will be providing contact information, first for a representative, the main person on your team that will be representing the applicant in the auction in the CPP process. Now, when the auction manager provides you with correspondence, documents, notices regarding your application material, whatever other communication from the auction manager to you, We will provide those communications and notifications to the representative you will have named, as well as to any nominees that you have named, so other individuals in your bidder team to which you want, that you want to, who you want to receive those materials. It is optional to provide nominees, but it is required to provide a representative. Other contact information that's required is for a legal representative in Ohio. So that's an individual or a company that will agree to accept service of process on your behalf. And it is important that that company or that individual have an address in Ohio. There are requirements on the PGM front to be fulfilled. That is, a applicant should be qualified as a market buyer or and market seller and qualified as a load serving entity. If that's not the case, it doesn't mean that you can't participate, but it means that you will have to certify that you have looked at the requirements for such qualification in PGM and that you will be able to meet those requirements by the start of the supply period. In addition to that contact information and the requirements from PJM, the applicant will have to provide certain certification. In particular, you will have to agree to the terms of the master SSO supply agreement. So all bidders agree to the terms of the supply agreement as it is currently posted and has been approved. There is no variation or changes that are possible at this point. You also have to agree to the term of the CBP rules, that is, all the rules that specify how the auction will be conducted. And finally, there's a number of certifications regarding keeping information that's related to the auction confidential. So those undertakings are going to be in one of the inserts that you will have to provide with the Part 1 application. With the Part 1 application, you also be required to provide some financial information, either for the applicant, if the applicant is relying on its own financial standing, or for a guarantor, if you are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. That will include financial statements, both annual and quarterly, credit ratings, and you will be able to provide those credit ratings as entry into the online Part 1 form. You will be able to upload the financial statements to the Part 1 application. Also, as we mentioned, for foreign entities, so either if as an applicant you're a foreign entity, or if as an applicant you intend on relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, then is your possibility to provide additional information on the creditworthiness of the applicant or the guarantor, and you're also required to provide in draft form the documents that would be required under the master SSO supply agreement. AP Ohio will then evaluate the sufficiency of those documents and provide to you any comments or changes that are required for those documents to be acceptable to AEP Ohio. Finally, as I mentioned, there is an opportunity in the Part 1 application to request modification to certain credit instruments that we call the pre-bid credit instruments, and one does that by submitting a red line of the credit instrument, and you can also do that by upload to the application website. That will be evaluated by AP Ohio, and any modification that you propose and that's accepted by AP Ohio for one bidder is then made available to all bidders on an optional basis by including that modification in the list of acceptable modifications that will be posted to the website. So I mentioned that there was a number of inserts for the Part 1 application, so they're provided to you here. Each insert has a particular title. So for example, the first one is the designation of the representative. so that main contact person that we were talking about, and the insert is also numbered. So that's the first insert of the Part 1 application, so P1-1. It is required of everyone, but for returning bidder, it will be retained in the Part 1 application. So in some sense, it's waived for returning bidders, unless there's a change, of course, in the personnel in the bidder team, and that you wish to name a new representative. Of course, that is allowed, but that is not necessary for a returning bidder. Same thing, there are inserts for the responsibilities of the representative for designating nominees. So as I mentioned, that's optional. You can leave it to a single representative that will receive all the correspondence and material from the auction manager, or you can name other individuals in your bidder team. A legal representative, that's the individual or the company that agrees to accept service of process on your behalf. For the PJM requirements, that's an insert in case you are not currently a load serving entity and do not currently fulfill the PJM requirements that I mentioned. In that case, you will be asked to certify that you see no impediments to being able to have those qualifications by the start of the supply period. The certifications are the undertakings that I discussed, including agreeing to the terms of the contract and the auction rules. And finally, if a bidder has a bidding agreement or is operating under any kind of agreement with another bidder in the auction, there is a requirement to disclose that to the auction manager, and there is an insert to be able to do that. So that's our overview of the Part 1 application. Applicants will submit their materials, and if they are successful in the Part 1 application, then they become qualified bidders, and they are invited to submit the Part 2 application. And a qualified bidder that submits the Part 2 application and that is successful then becomes a registered bidder. The Part 2 application has a number of requirements, and that will include submitting an indicative offer and preliminary interest, submitting pre-bid security, making additional undertakings, certifications, including those that ensure compliance with the association and confidential information rules. And finally, for foreign entities, as I mentioned, so that's either a foreign applicant or an applicant that relies on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, then any comments and required modification that AEP Ohio will have provided to you on the draft document in the Part 1 application, then you will be required to make those changes and submit executed additional documents in the Part 2 application. So if you aren't able to do that, so let's say you're an applicant and you rely on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor and you're unable to provide those documents, then you will not be able to rely on the financial standing of the guarantor. So going through those requirements in a little bit more detail, the first one is to submit an indicative offer. So we've discussed that already a little bit in the first part of the presentation. So an indicative offer is across all products, the 12, 24, and 36-month product, and it consists of two numbers of tranches. The number of tranches that you're willing to bid at the minimum starting price, so that's the $65 per megawatt hour, and the number of tranches that you're willing to bid at the maximum starting price. And those should really be the maximum that you're willing to bid, because the indicative offer at the maximum starting price is going to determine the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in round one of the auction. That's your initial eligibility. But you're never going to be able to increase the number of tranches that you bid during the course of the auction. So it really determines the maximum number of tranches that you're going to be able to bid throughout the auction. So that's the first important feature of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price, is that it determines your initial eligibility. It also determines the amount of pre-bid security required with the Part 2 application. So basically, it's directly proportional to the number of tranches that you're going to name as your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. The indicative offer was for all the products taken together. The preliminary interest is the same thing, the number of tranches at the minimum starting price, maximum starting price. The difference is that it's a number of tranche per product. So you can provide your specific interest in the 12, 24, and 36-month product by providing a number of tranches for each of those products and for each of the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. A couple of rules of the road in terms of the preliminary interest. First, your preliminary interest in a given product should not exceed the indicative offer that you've made for all the products together. So let's say it's 10 tranches, your indicative offer at the maximum starting price, then you cannot put a preliminary interest of more than 10 for your 12-month product. The second is that the sum of the preliminary interest can exceed the indicative offer. So let's say, again, you've made an offer of 10 tranches, indicative offer of 10 tranches at the maximum starting price, you could well put as your preliminary interest 10 tranches for 12 months, 10 tranches for 24 months, and 10 tranches for 36 months. You don't need to break out the 10 tranches into three numbers that add up to 10. What that would say is that your maximum number of tranches that you're willing to bid is 10 at the maximum starting price, and you'd be willing to bid that number on the 12 months or the 24 months or the 36 month product. As we mentioned, there are load caps in the auction, which is a maximum on the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win in the auction, and that's set at 80% of the tranches that are available at the start of the auction. So for this November auction, 50 tranches in total, and 40 tranches for the load cap. So that's generally the maximum that a bidder can bid and win in the auction, but that amount could be further reduced if a bidder is subject to the credit-based tranche cap. And that depends on the credit worthiness assessment of the bidder or the guarantor based on the financial information that you will have provided in the Part 1 application. So roughly speaking, for double B entities or higher that are rated double B or above, then there is no credit-based tranche cap, so no further reduction on the amount that the bidder can bid and win. But below that, there's potentially a credit-based tranche cap of 10 for double B minus or 5 for entities that are rated below double B minus. For the additional Part 2 requirements, I mentioned that the indicative offer determines the amount of pre-bid security. Basically, each qualified bidder with its Part 2 application has to submit pre-bid security of $500,000 per tranche of its indicative offer at the maximum starting price, so it's proportional to that indicative offer, as a letter of credit or cash. So if you want, that's the base of the pre-bid security that everybody has to provide. In certain cases, and we'll provide those details in the notification for your Part 1 application, in certain cases, additional pre-bid security will be required. And if it is required, it will be in an amount of $300,000 per tranche. So, for example, if you're relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, then you can provide either a letter of intent to provide a guarantee from that guarantor for that amount, or you can just increase the amount of your letter of credit. There's additional undertakings, as I mentioned, that includes certifying your compliance with the association and confidential information rules, so certifying that you're not associated with another qualified bidder, and that would be any relationship as defined in more details in the CPP rule that would prevent you from fully competing against that other qualified bidder. So those rules are there to promote the the competitiveness of the auction. If there are some certifications that you cannot make, you have the ability to provide an explanation, and there may be additional conditions placed on your participation in the auction. You also certify to keep information that's related to the auction confidential, as well as agreeing that your bids in the auction will become a binding obligation should you be a winner of the auction, and other certifications such as agreeing not to assign any rights that you have obtained as a virtue of being a registered bidder in the auction. Finally, as we discussed, for applicants that are a foreign entity or applicants that are relying on foreign guarantor, then there are additional documents to be provided under the master SSO agreement, including an opinion from foreign counsel, meaning counsel in the foreign jurisdiction, that is the jurisdiction of the applicant or the guarantor, and a certificate of the corporate secretary. And all such documents must incorporate any required modification by AAP Ohio upon its review of the draft submitted with the Part 1 application. Only two inserts for the Part 2 application, the second one being the insert that you will use to make the certifications and undertakings that we've discussed in this portion of the presentation. There is also a cash certification insert, so that means if you choose to submit your pre-bid security through a letter of credit, then you don't need to use that insert at all. But if you are providing the pre-bid security as cash, then you have to provide the cash certification. And basically what it does is acknowledge the conditions under which cash may be drawn. So that completes our overview of the application process. And in this next section, we'll talk a bit more about bidding in the auction and the auction format. So a few general things. The auction format is, at a high level, both a multi-product design and a multi-round design. And by multi-product design, what I mean is that the tranches from all the products, the 24 months, 12 months, 36 months, are procured concurrently, simultaneously in one process. It's a multiple round design. As we mentioned in the first part of the presentation, suppliers bid by stating the number of tranches that they want to bid or supply, not by quoting prices. So the prices are suggested by the auction manager, and suppliers in a round state how many tranches they want to supply of each of the products at those prices. If, for a given product, there are more tranches that are bid than are needed, then there is what we call excess supply for that product, and the price is going to tick down in the next round. At those new prices, suppliers then get to bid again, and they can switch their bids from one product to another. They can leave their bid the same. They can reduce the number of tranches that they're bidding. We'll go through all these options in a minute. And they continue, that process continues, and the prices continue to tick down for the products for which there are excess supply until we get to a point where there's a balance between the number of tranches that are bid and the tranches that are needed, and that's when the auction ends. So in this multi-round process, what does a round look like? A round is further divided or subdivided into three phases. So bidding phase, when suppliers are submitting their bids, so stating how many tranches that they want to bid of each product at the going prices that are announced by the auction manager. There's a second phase, which is a calculating phase. When that starts, suppliers can no longer submit bids, and suppliers don't yet have information about the results of the round. So in this phase, the auction manager tabulates the results and calculates the prices for the next round and those other necessary calculations to the functioning of the auction. In the reporting phase, the auction manager provides information back to bidders. in particular, provide the total excess supply or an indication of the total excess supply in the auction. And that indication is a range of excess supply. And we also provide the going prices for the next round. When we are in round one, there's no opportunity for the going prices of the next round, some round zero. So how do you know the prices in round one? As we mentioned when we talked about the schedule, you will be informed of the prices for round one as a registered bidder by the auction manager no later than 3 days before the auction, and plan for this auction to be a little earlier than those 3 days. There is, as per the auction rules, the possibility there will be a reduction in the tranche target. So if there is insufficient supply for the tranches that were intended to be procured to ensure competitive bidding, then the auction manager has the discretion to reduce the tranche target. And the exact criteria that could lead to that kind of reduction is determined prior to the auction, but is not announced to bidders. Now, as the auction goes on, once certain pre-specified criteria have been met, then the discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. So it can only occur earlier on in the auction rather than later. So in the next few slides, we'll go over a little bit more in detail the bidding in round one and in subsequent rounds. So in round one, it's very simple. What a bid is a number of tranches for each of the product. So you're given the round one prices, and you provide the number of tranches that you're willing to supply or bid for each product at the round one prices. And those round one prices need not be the same for all of the products. Now, of note, the constraint in the bid in round one is that a bidder cannot bid in aggregate, so in total across all products, more than its initial eligibility. And remember that the initial eligibility is determined on the basis of your indicative offer at the maximum starting price, as you will have stated that indicative offer in your Part 2 application. So you will not be able to, and it's important, in aggregate, because we'll talk about switching. When you switch, you increase the number of tranche for a particular product. But in aggregate across all products, you will not be able to increase the number of tranches that you bid. So that will be the bid. And on a practical basis, the auction is online. So you will be entering that bid in the auction software, verifying that bid, and after the calculating phase is over, the reporting phase begins, and you will get a report, again, through the auction software. So it's not going to look exactly like on this slide, but the basis of the information is what's on this slide, namely a range of total excess supply. So this says between 51 and 55 tranches of excess supply. So if tranches bid in excess of what's needed, more or less, there's a more precise definition of total excess supply in the glossary. And the information provides the prices for round two for each of the products. So the prices, if there was excess supply for each of the products, will have decreased from the prices in round one by an amount that's called a decrement. So you will see that range of excess supply. You will see the next round prices. You will see the result of your own bid. So there's going to be a separate report through the auction software to view the result of your own bid. But you have no information about other bidders' bids, their identities, or the eligibilities of those that may still be bidding in the auction. So I mentioned that the price goes down by a decrement, and those decrements, roughly speaking, are related to the amount of excess supply. The more excess supply there is on the product, everything else being equal, the bigger is going to be the decrease in price from one round to another. In the bidder user manual, so that's a document that will be provided to registered bidders only, there will be information about those specific auction parameters. So you will be given formulas or tables that will show you how the decrements are determined. That being said, so it is mechanistic, the setting of the decrement, but that being said, the auction manager has the discretion to override the decrement, and the auction manager advises bidders whenever the decrements are changed from the formula that had been published. The bidders also are provided, through this bidder user manual, the ranges that will be used for the total excess supply, and there's other information in the bidder user manual, such as software manual portion that shows you the functionality of the auction software that's used to conduct the auction. So that's round one. That's easy a bit. It's just number of tranches for each of the products. In round two and subsequent rounds, as the prices are reduced from one round to the next, then a bidder can always leave the bid unchanged. That's always possible. A bidder, in addition, could withdraw tranches from the auction, so that means reducing the total number of tranches that are bid across all products. The bidder could switch, which means reducing the tranches bid on one product to be able to increase the number of tranches bid on one or two other products, or the bidder could do both and at the same time withdraw and switch. So again, I mentioned the bidder cannot increase the number of tranches bid in total across all products, and the way that's formulated in the rules is to say that a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. And in round two, the bidder's eligibility is the number of tranches bid in round one. So whatever you bid in round one in total across all products, you cannot bid more tranches than that in round two. In round three and any subsequent round, your eligibility is going to be your eligibility in the prior round less the number of tranches that you withdraw from the auction. That means when you withdraw a tranche from the auction, it is gone and you can never bid on it again. So that's on a total basis, talking about eligibility and withdrawing tranches. Now, if we're talking about a specific product, can you always decrease the number of tranches you bid on a product? And the answer to that is no, because the price for a product has not decreased, has not ticked down, then a bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches that you bid for that product. So in other words, there was a price in a prior round, you made a bid, a number of tranches bid for that product at that price. That bid is a binding obligation. You cannot rescind it. You cannot decrease your offer if the price has not changed. And when I say decrease, I both mean taking tranches out of the auction as well as decreasing the number of tranches you bid on a product to be able to switch those tranches to another product. So the next few slides, I'll just provide a little bit more information about those circumstances where when you submit a bid, you will have to provide additional elements you bid over and above just the number of tranches that you're bidding for each of the products. So the first circumstance where you will have an additional element to your bid is when you're withdrawing tranches, so when you're decreasing the total number of tranches that you bid from one round to the next. So in the example that you have here, bidder is maintaining the number of tranches bid on the 12-month and 24-month product, but reducing the number of tranches that it's bidding on the 36-month product. So in total, it's withdrawing one tranche. In that case, what you will be asked to provide is an exit price. An exit price is the last and best offer for that tranche or those tranches, because you can withdraw more than one, that you're withdrawing. So in this example, the bidder is willing to bid that tranche at $70 megawatt hour, not willing to bid it at $68.50. So there is a best and last offer in there, and the bidder provides $69.37 as being that price. So that exit price has to be above the current going price, because you're not willing to bid the tranche at that amount. But it can go right up to the previous going price where you did submit a bid at that price. Now, as I said, eligibility is lost whenever you make a withdrawal, whether or not that withdrawal is retained. And why would it be retained? It would be retained if, in this example, for the 36-month product, there was an insufficient number of tranches bid when all the bids were considered in round two. And it's possible that while you ask to withdraw that tranche would be retained for purposes of filling the target for the product. There's also a specific circumstance where a bidder will be asked for additional information, or there's an additional element to the bid when you are switching. Normally when you're switching, there's no additional information required, but if you are reducing the tranches you're bidding on one product and increasing the number of tranches that you're bidding on the other two products, then you will be asked for a switch priority. So in the example that we have here, the bidder is bidding the same number of tranches in round one and round two, namely 17 tranches in total. But in round two, the bidder is reallocating those tranches, so reducing the number of tranches bid on the 36-month product by two tranches and increasing both the 12 and the 24-month product by one tranche each. So that's just a reallocation. In that case, you will be asked a switching priority to answer the following question. If for the 36-month product, we went from a situation where we had too many tranches bid in round one for what was needed to a situation in round two where we don't have enough tranches bid in round two, and we have to pull back, retain one of those switches, which of the switches, the one of the two switches that's going to be allowed compared to the one switch that will be retained on the 36-month product, which of those switches should go first? And the answer to that question for this bidder is the 12-month product. So if the auction manager has to retain one tranche of the two switches from the 36-month product and to let one switch be allowed, the switch that will be allowed will be the switch to the 12-month product. So the switching priorities are one and two, and one is the highest priority. The last time where you may have an additional element to your bid is when you are both switching and withdrawing. So in the example we have here, we always start in the same way with the bidders having 17 tranche bid, and the bidder goes from 17 tranche bid to 16 tranches bid, 7 plus 7 plus 2. So there's one tranche that's withdrawn. Now, if you look at the reduction in number of tranches bid, there's one tranche reduced from the 36-month, one tranche reduced from the 24-month. So one of those tranches is withdrawn, and the other tranche is switched to the 12-month product. If that's the situation you're in, so you're decreasing the number of tranches bid from two products, and you're switching, so you're increasing the number of tranches bid on the third product, then you will be asked designate which of the tranches is being withdrawn. In other words, is it the tranche on the 24-month that's being withdrawn, or is that tranche getting switched to the 12-month product? Why is that important? Well, it's important because whatever tranche you are actually withdrawing, you will be allowed to submit an exit price for that tranche. So in this example, the bidder designates the 36-month tranche as being the one that's withdrawn and is allowed to provide an exit price that has to be greater than $68.50, which is the price of the round, but could have gone right up to the round one price of $70 per megawatt hour. So to kind of recap, if a bidder requests a switch or a withdrawal in round two or in any subsequent round, then that switch or withdrawal may not always be granted, as we mentioned. So the auction manager may retain tranches from exits or from switches if those are necessary to fill the target. The order in which the auction manager fills the tranche target is basically in order of price. So first, the tranche is bid at the going price, took the lowest price, and then the prices from exits or withdrawals in price order, and finally, by denying switches. And the reason those are the highest prices is because the switches are retained at the prices at which they were freely bid, and that's the bid, or the price, rather, of the prior round. Now, a bidder that has switched or withdrawn will get information in the reporting phase of round two about the results of its own bid, including whether any of its withdrawals were retained or any of its switches were denied. The bidder also and continues to get information concerning the range of total excess supply as well as the prices for the next round. So that process continues, and as long as there is total excess supply that's strictly positive, more tranches bid than there are available or that is needed and procured through the auction, and the auction is going to close when the total excess supply is zero and prices no longer tick down. Now, of note is the bidding on all products will stop at the same time, meaning that if in a given round, the number of tranches bid, let's say, just for the sake of example, the number of tranches bid on a product is exactly equal to the number of tranches that's needed. That doesn't mean that bidding is over for that product, because there could always be a bidder that switches tranches back into that product and makes the price of that product tick down. So the auction closes when, on an auction-wide basis, total excess supply is equal to zero, and therefore none of the prices on any of the products can tick down anymore. When the auction closes, there is a single price that's determined for each of the products, so all of the winning bidders will get the same price. Now, exactly how that price is determined depends on how the tranche target for a product is filled in the last round, and it could end on the going price for the final round if the number of tranches bid is exactly equal to the number of tranches that were needed as tranche targets. It could end on an exit price, or it could end on a denied switch as well. So we're not going to go through all of those examples, but just to illustrate the how the final auction price is determined, we'll just look at a single product. So you have to think of the other products as those products also are coming to a close at the same time or have already come to a close, and we're just examining that single product here and what happens in that single product between the penultimate round 11 and the final round 12 is that we went from a situation where we had two tranches of excess supply on that product to being three tranches short of the target. And that means that in total, the three hypothetical bidders we have here have withdrawn five tranches in aggregate in that particular round. As we know, when bidders withdraw, they have to submit an exit price, and those are the exit price that were submitted, so 38.69, 38.99, and 39.42. So in that case, as I said, the tranche target is filled in price order, so it's first filled with the 14 tranches that are bid at the going price of 38.68, and then we will continue filling with the next in price order, which are the two withdrawals at 38.69, and finally one tranche at 38.99 to fill the 17 tranche target. So that will be when we stop, and that price, which is the lowest price at which we can fill the tranche target with the bids that we have, that $38.99 becomes the auction clearing price for that particular product, and should the commission approve the results, would become the price that all winning bidders for that product we'll get. So that's the functioning of the option at, I'll say, a more theoretical level. It's described in the CBP rules. I tried to give you a little bit of a flavor, too, of the fact that the auction is conducted as online auction and that you will be submitting your bids through the auction software. So let me talk a little bit more about the practicalities of bidding in the auction. Now, I will emphasize that there is a trial auction, and that's a very important opportunity for bidders to practice the bidding procedure. And that applies to returning bidders as well. It has the last few auctions under ESP3 have been single product auctions. There are additional components of the bids in a multi-product auction, such as the one for this November, including switching and everything that goes along with that. So all bidders are encouraged to participate in the trial auction on the Thursday before Thanksgiving week, November 16th. So you'll be submitting your bids online using the auction software. And should you have any difficulties with that, you can phone the auction manager's office to get help or to provide your bid by phone. So the backup bid procedure is by phone. And what that means is that you're going to provide all the information about your bid to a technical assistant, and the technical assistant will be entering and verifying that bid in the auction software on your behalf. So you have to allow sufficient time for the technical assistant to be able to get the information from you, log in, and enter and verify your bid. Now, during the bidding phase, you can submit a bid, you can change your mind, and you can override that bid as long as you submit the bid during the bidding phase, so that if you submit multiple bids, the last bid that's going to be submitted and verified in the bidding phase, and that's processed by the auction software, that's the bid that counts. Either submitted and verified by the bidder, if you're submitting your bids online, or submitted and verified by the technical assistant, if you're submitting your bid through the backup procedure. It's entirely your responsibility to get in a bid on time, and that includes allowing sufficient time in case of technical difficulties to phone the auction manager and get a bid in through the technical assistant. So it will be your responsibility as well to ascertain whatever systems you think is necessary to minimize your possibility of having technical difficulties that would impair your ability to bid in the auction. And similarly, if you're providing a backup bid, it is also entirely the bidder's responsibility to ensure that you're providing a bid that's consistent with the CBP rules. Otherwise, you won't be able to enter that bid. From a purely technical standpoint, the requirements, the system requirements to be able to access the auction software are really minimal. It's a web-based system. You will need a standard PC running Windows 7 or later, or Mac OS 10.7 or later. We expect that you will think about, as part of the systems that you need to minimize the chances of problems that would impair your ability to bid in the auction, and in addition to having primary access to the Internet to be able to submit your bids online, that you may also have a secondary access through an alternative internet service provider, whether that's a wireless card, some other wireless network, for example. You will be required to have a web browser that is supported by the auction software, and that's Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox, Safari, or Chrome. So, as I mentioned, it's entirely your responsibility to decide which systems that you have to be in place to minimize your probability of your ability to bid being impaired. Well, you could consider having various backups, including backup laptops or an individual or a team in a different geographical location. Just a reminder in closing that all of the information that you need for participation in the auction, including the governing documents that were mentioned at the start of the webcast, are on the CBP website, aapohiocbp.com. And on the left-hand side navigation bar, you can get through various tabs, including the information tab. In the information tab, you have all of the documents that you need, the CBP rules that provide more detail on the auction format and what is a bid and what is you are able to do in bidding or not, the master SSO supplier agreement that provides all the terms of the contract and the transaction, as well as illustrative Part 1 and Part 2 forms. So if you want to see the requirements that you will have to fulfill, they are there in the illustrative form, as well as the credit instrument, communication protocols, associated bidder rules, as well as a glossary of terms. On the website, there's also a data room that you can use to prepare for your bids, where AEP Ohio provides on a monthly basis hourly energy, customer counts, and additional data. The data room is updated on the 20th of each month for any data series that's provided on a monthly basis. And finally, you can always ask any questions that maybe you didn't think of or haven't had time to provide on this webcast by going to the Ask a Question portion of the CBP website. So that's under the Contact Us link on the left-hand side navigation bar, and it's a sublink that's called Ask a Question, and typically questions are answered via email within 2 business days, and any responses, either to the questions today or questions submitted through the website, are posted as FAQ on the CBP website. You can also contact us by email at aap-cbp@nera.com. So finally, that concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.